Saturday, September 7th. So far today, there are no reports of aerial activity over England and Germany. But during the night, both capitals and other points underwent heavy attacks. Berlin had a three-hour air raid, one of the most severe it has yet experienced. But Nazis claimed that German planes had bombed many important points throughout England. In London, officials were taking stock of the damage resulting from yesterday's 24-hour raids. Bombs fell in many London sections, within a radius of 15 miles from the heart of the city. Tenements were destroyed. Now the news, direct from London and Berlin, then to our own nation's capital, for the report of Albert Warner. We take you first to the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London. A refreshed London, because after midnight last night, relative quiet prevailed, in central London at least. A marked contrast to our previous night of extended alarm. But parts of London caught a packet, as they say over here, just before midnight. In fact, many of the now homeless people declare that the German bombs beat the air raid sirens by at least 10 minutes. The raid on a thickly populated district in eastern London came about 11:30 last night, just between the all-clear signal of a previous German visit and the quavering howl of the alarm which signaled the arrival of a new batch of German planes. Following the bombing in the southern London area, traffic had to be diverted for a small distance. The trolley cars in that section are still not running this morning. There's a big crater near the subway station. Air raid wardens are still digging in the ruined houses in two streets. And in another district, in East London, about 30 other workmen's families are homeless. The official statement this morning tells us that high explosives and firebombs fell on London, mainly in these eastern and southern districts. Industrial buildings and private houses were damaged, and a number of fires started, which have now been extinguished or brought under control. The German raiders seem to be dropping a great number of firebombs these nights. But London has built up what is probably the world's greatest firefighting system to defeat the incendiary bomb. And so far, the firefighters are beating the bomb. The German raiders are providing London with a magnificent spectacle these nights in the form of parachute flares. Those slowly burning, slowly sinking magnesia torches which light up the entire square miles when they descend. These flares are used to illuminate targets. But in only one case last night did bombs follow the parachute flares. This has led some people here to the conclusion that the flares are being dropped to cause alarm. The only comment I've heard about them has been that they made driving at night easier. Some people insist they can read newspapers in the streets by their weird light, too. In the blackout at night, you know, people here often shout at persons lighting cigarettes to put out that light. Last night I heard some humorist shouting the same thing at a German parachute. People here are asking why British night fighting planes are not equipped with searchlights to pick out the German night bombers. It's been reported that a German machine, by means of a strong searchlight, was able to hold a British machine in the light and fire at it with telling effect. It's no secret that experiments are being carried on in this country. One of the advantages of a searchlight on a night fighter is that the beam could be used to dazzle the enemy pilot. The disadvantage is that the enemy machine gunner can fire right along the searchlight beam at the fighter plane. We've just been permitted to disclose the name of one crowded London area which was bombed last night. It's on the south side of the river, and the subway station there bears the strange name of Elephant and Castle, so called because of an old pub nearby which has borne that name down the centuries. It contains row after row of little yellow brick houses, and it's right next to Lambeth, the working class district where they invented the famous Lambeth Walk. Today, just when people were getting used to what seemed to be a new phase of the air war with continuous raids on London, the Germans seem to have slackened off. We haven't had our breakfast alarm this morning, nor the usual one for lunch. But beauty parlors here report a great rush of trade in the last few days. Women are coming in to have those tired lines around the mouth and eyes massaged away. And some of the beauty specialists are advertising air raid treatments aimed at relaxing the nerves and muscles most affected by strain and lack of sleep. Incidentally, official records just compiled here show that from June 17th to September 6th, 1,688 German planes have been brought down. These planes, they think, must have contained about 4,000 German airmen. We return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Wireless, sir, reporting from London. At this time, we had expected to take you direct to Berlin for the latest news reports from the German capital. But up to this time, we've been unable to contact our Berlin correspondent. We take you now to the nation's capital for the report of Albert Warner. We take you now to Washington.
Sometime today, sometime before midnight, the administration leaders hope, the conscription bill will come to a vote in the House. There are still amendments to be dealt with. House members may not talk as long as senators, but they like their 2 or 3 minutes in the spotlight. And there are 435 of them. One highly important amendment remains for action, along with a good many lesser proposals. The important proposition deals with industrial conscription, an issue brought to the front by Wendell Willkie, Republican presidential candidate. The administration amendment, advanced by the Military Affairs Committee, proposes penalties for industrialists who decline to cooperate with the government in its defense program. The amendment would let the government operate a recalcitrant plant on a rental basis, but the ownership title would remain with the private owners. The Senate adopted perhaps a sterner amendment, allowing the government to condemn and take complete possession of facilities whose managers, in the opinion of the government, are not cooperating. Mr. Willkie complained of the arbitrary threat to industry, later explained he was not opposed to penalties for non-cooperators if applied by orderly regulation and the rule of law, and not by the fiat of one man. Once all the amendments are disposed of, the House, which has been sitting in Committee of the Whole, comes out of committee and greets itself as the House again. At this point, the administration may ask for a roll call on any amendment adopted in Committee of the Whole, which it doesn't like. There, the Fish Amendment rises for a second vote and by roll call. Supporters of the draft bill hope to overturn and reverse the fish provision. As it stands, it would postpone the draft for 60 days while the president issues a call for volunteers and waits to see if 400,000 men flock to the colors. But whether the Fish Amendment stays in or out, the bill is slated for passage, and the principle of peacetime conscription seems about to be written into law. Already, the Congress has finished its work on the $5 billion record appropriation bill for national defense. The Senate completed action yesterday. And today, or in the next 2 or 3 days, the president will sign the bill. A total of $10 billion have been appropriated this year for defense, not counting additional billions in authorizations for expenditure later on. Despite a drastic tax bill to raise $1 billion additional revenue already enacted, and an excess profits tax bill underway, which may produce $500 million more, a deficit of over $5 billion for the current fiscal year is foreseen. In this country, as in all other large nations, the deficit grows. Whether in the war or out of it, the whole world is going deeper and deeper into the red. The Defense Advisory Commission is reported studying a possible embargo on steel scrap export. The commission may recommend such action to President Roosevelt. At present, a large part of the United States scrap exports go to Japan. After the draft bill, the only remaining big measure before Congress is the excess profits tax bill. The Senate Finance Committee seems to be in sympathy with a charge that no one can understand it in the shape it came from the House. The committee is rewriting the measure. Chairman Pat Harrison has called the group into an extra Saturday meeting in an attempt to get the bill before the Senate early next week. Administration leaders hope to begin debate on it Tuesday. It has been given precedence over all other legislation. Senate Majority Leader Barkley says he thinks that the upper house can get the tax bill out of the way in 3 days. When these bills, conscription and excess profits, are out of the way, either adjournment or recess is now definitely indicated. Republican congressmen who opposed adjournment early in the summer now want to get away just as badly as do the Democrats. And Senate isolationists, who once thought that Congress would be a check on the president, are now despondent. After the destroyer deal, in which the president ignored Congress, some of these isolationists said, we might just as well be at home. As adjournment or recess approaches, Representative Joseph Martin, Republican leader of the House, and his party's national chairman, predicts a minimum gain of 60 House members for the Republicans in the next election. His prediction is that there will be a gain of between 60 and 75. The Republicans need a gain of only 48 to organize the House and elect Mr. Martin Speaker. Well, the present Democratic Speaker of the House, William Bankhead, declines to be worried over the outlook. I don't hear that they are going to make any substantial gain, he tells me. In fact, the Republicans may lose some seats. But this talk of winning or losing seats makes members of the House nervous. Political fences back home are calling them. It won't be long now. We return you now to New York.
That was Albert Warner speaking from Washington. And still, we are unable to contact our Berlin correspondent. However, we do bring you at this time the latest news from Berlin, received at Columbia's newsroom in New York. Sweeping over Berlin at altitudes of only 3,000 feet and lighting their targets with parachute flares, British bombing planes raided Berlin for 2¾ hours in the early hours of this morning, dropping high explosive and incendiary bombs. Fires were started at various points in the city, including a huge warehouse and a stable a few blocks north of Unter den Linden, municipal buildings in the Wiesensee suburb in northeastern Berlin, the old criminal courts building in the center of the city, a storehouse, and police station in the diplomatic quarters a few blocks southwest of Unter den Linden, and a radio factory and dwellings in the wedding district in North Berlin. A tour of the city arranged under the auspices of the propaganda ministry after the raid showed that bombs had struck in the districts to which correspondents were taken, near legitimate military objectives at most points. Across the street from the criminal courts building is a great military barracks. A bomb struck the Tegel railroad station in northern Berlin, not far from the Borsig arms factory. One was killed and 10 were wounded when a bomb struck near an automobile chassis plant. It was admitted that one searchlight of a battery had been destroyed at Brandenburg, 55 miles west or southwest of Berlin. The raid was the noisiest and most dramatic yet. The air raid alarm sounded at 12:15 a.m. Heavy anti-aircraft gunfire started immediately. Flashes of heavy batteries lighted the sky to the west, north, and east. About 15 minutes later, the hum of airplane motors was distinctly audible. British planes had begun to cruise over the city. The planes dropped dozens of parachute flares. One dropped direct over the United Press building in Unter den Linden, the center of the city. The Wilhelmstrasse and Adolf Hitler's ornate chancellery situated on it must have been visible to the flyers in the blue-white glare. It was evident that the planes were flying back and forth across the city on the same path. Daringly, the planes came down to about 3,000 feet, but not once were they picked up by searchlights. The British planes seemed to be disregarding entirely the heavy fire from the ground. One plane dropped a string of parachute flares across the center of the city from west to east, circled, and dropped another series farther south from east to west. As soon as a flare dropped, guns blazed into furious action, trying to shoot them down. Pom-pom and machine guns joined in the fire unavailingly. Several times it was observed from the United Press building, as soon as a flare would go out, a British plane would return to the spot and drop another at almost exactly the same point, despite deafening ground fire. After an hour and a half, reddish glows began to appear in the northern and northeastern sky. Two fires, it could be seen, were put out quickly. A third burned for 2 hours. Windows rattled and buildings trembled in the din of gunfire. It was noted that, though this part of the dispatch emphasized the number of parachute flares, the daring of the British flyers, and the fury of gunfire, it did not mention bombing. Under German propaganda ministry rules, foreign correspondents may send nothing on an air raid until after the all-clear signal had been sounded, and then their dispatches must conform to official versions. English bombers flew to Berlin in several waves. Two waves were repulsed before they reached the city by anti-aircraft fire and night fighters. Several planes of a third wave flew over the anti-air cordon and dropped bombs on various points of the city, particularly in the workers' quarter of Wedding in the north, where several fires were ignited and there was appreciable damage to buildings. And thus we conclude this morning's report of European development. Larry Lesser reported from London, Albert Warner from Washington. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.